It's Tuesday the 29th of June 2004, and I'm speaking with Michael Meacher, MP, who until 2003 was the Environment Minister in Tony Blair's cabinet, and last year wrote a controversial article which appeared in The Guardian called "This War on Terrorism is Bogus." Michael, hello.
Good morning.
Mr. Meacher, you've written the foreword to a new book which has been published both in the UK and the US by David Ray Griffin called The New Pearl Harbor, which examines difficult questions about the September 11th attack. How long ago did Mr. Griffin contact you and ask you to write this?
I think I was contacted, it's now being June, I would say about 3-4 months ago.
And you didn't have any reservations in writing this for him?
No. I wrote what I believe can be firmly justified. I made it clear in this foreword that I would not write something supporting a conspiracy theory. Conspiracies do occur in real life, there's plenty of historical evidence for that, but it's very easy to leap to a conspiracy theory and come up with sometimes what most people consider to be wild and off the wall. I would never do that. I think one should stick very firmly to established facts, to carefully measured likelihoods, rather than trying to prove predetermined theories. Now, I think what is good about Griffin's book is that he does keep very clearly to what could be documented and what be shown, either to be certain or certainly, on the evidence available, a very substantial likelihood. On that basis, I'm prepared to support it. One can raise questions. There are a lot of questions about 9/11 which do need to be raised, which have not been answered. But one should be very careful not to make allegations which cannot be substantiated.
Now, your article last year in The Guardian kicked off quite a storm and elicited the likes of David Aronovich and others, who's no relation to me, by the way, writing rebuttals. And you had much scorn poured on you for having written that article, didn't you?
I did. I certainly have no regrets about it, because I think every single word of what I said stands. What Aronovich tried to do was to suggest it was a conspiracy theory, which it isn't. He does not at any single point doubt the veracity of any statement, and it's about 2,500 words. It's a very long, very detailed article. It states all my sources so that everyone can check the points that I made. All the sources come from the public domain. I do not have access to any other material, but it is put together in a way that I think has not previously happened. It is taken largely from US public sources, Newsweek, Time magazine, quite a bit from English newspapers, Daily Telegraph, The Times, The Guardian, and from Associated News. All of these are public sources, and all of them, in my view, are completely reputable.
And the people reading your article could even verify these sources just using the internet, because most of these news publications are now on the web too. So
that, of course, is very important. One of the things that I have actually learned in the last year is there is a new reality out there at which material is exchanged, which, for reasons that one can only conjecture, do not get into the conventional media. They do not get into the world's newspapers, nor into radio and television by and large, but they are raising serious, thoughtful, real questions. But there is a suppression of these questions, let alone suppression of some of the evidence, because, of course, the newspaper industry is dominated by a very small number of individuals, as we know in this country, in Britain, by Rupert Murdoch and his 5 newspapers, Associated Press, the Daily Telegraph, which is changing ownership at the present time. But it's a very small coterie of highly politically motivated individuals, and what gets into the newspapers is very limited. Now, it's not to say that I think the proprietors ring up every day and say, don't print that, don't print that. Of course, that isn't what happens, but there is a culture of what fed into the media, which is read or listened to by the general public, which is very far from the open, free, transparent press that we are led to believe is the whole reality. It isn't. There is a great deal of questions that need to be raised which aren't. That, again, doesn't mean to say there are not some extremely good journalists who are radical, progressive, who do probe, who sometimes even put their lives at risk to get more data. Of course, all of that is true. It's a complex picture. But there is a great deal, particularly about an issue like 9/11, which has never, I think, been seriously discussed.
Yeah.
It needs to be discussed, and also the question of why a lot of these questions raised on the internet are not raised in the conventional media.
Now, what we're talking about here is that when one investigates, reads for oneself the accounts of September 11th, and reads what some people might call the official story, and then reads independent research about, say, the hijackers, or the events of what happened that day, or the timeline of response by the Air Force, or numerous other events, we find huge inconsistencies, don't we, between the official accounts and independent research.
Well, that, of course, is the key issue, that the official version simply does not stand up to scrutiny. There are several points where it is either silent, or completely fails to give a plausible answer, refuses to investigate what the implications of that silence or those gaps in the theory might mean, and where, I mean, some of the evidence suggested by the official version is so unlikely, so improbable, or indicates a view of events, of the structure of power, of the way decisions are taken, which is completely at variance with the sort of spun version which they would like you to believe. Now, all of this, I think, does need to be, you know, thoroughly investigated. I don't think any of us are yet in a position to know the truth about what actually happened on 9/11. But I do think it is, after all, the most infamous terrorist atrocity in history, perpetrated against probably the greatest military power the world has ever known. And I think the implications of that do need to be explored until all of these questions are fully and convincingly answered. I don't think we're anywhere near that point at the moment.
Now, David Ray Griffin, in his book, he's largely just asking these questions, going through the official accounts, and then going through the independent research and pointing out the inconsistencies and raising these questions. Now, you're saying that the mainstream media refuse to ask these questions, yet they're out there on the internet. Now, this is something that you've only recently discovered, despite your long time in politics. Is that right, Mr. Meacher?
Yes, it is. I do think the internet has made a dramatic difference, and I had not anticipated the degree to which I now believe that what gets into the conventional news media is very far from the full truth, or indeed even the full exploration or the full questioning of the truth. There is a lot of evidence which, of course, you would never suspect, which, for whatever reason, is not produced, is not made public, and therefore the relevant questions which it raises never come into the public domain either. And I had not anticipated, after 30 years in politics, the degree to which that is true. I suppose I have always suspected that those who write newspapers, who lead the agenda each day, and who largely predetermine the political debate that takes place, I assume that that more or less did probably encapsulate the main issues. I had not realized the extent to which that, I think, now is not the case, that there is a great deal of huge importance which is never even raised. And I think it's 9/11 which has really brought this truly home.
And in terms of having the general public investigate these things for themselves and to think for themselves on these issues and then weigh up in their own minds whether this makes sense, if they are only reading newspapers, then it would be much more difficult to crack that nut, so to speak, that they begin to see it differently or see other sources that conflict with that mainstream account. There's very little out there that tells them that there are alternative explanations out there and alternative accounts of events.
Yes, that's right. I mean, of course, most of the public are not really deeply involved in politics. Most of them are not going to pursue in depth and with persistence these issues, even though they may read an account and may think that this doesn't really seem to me to be a very full explanation, or it appears flawed, or it raises doubts or questions in my mind. I mean, most people have neither the time or the inclination to pursue those, but when something like 9/11 happens, where around 3,000 people are killed, and the widows, the spouses, the families are left asking questions. So, first of all, this has had absolutely enormous attention, of course, obviously. They're all aware of each other as a group, sharing a similar experience. And there is an enormous political and personal and emotional pressure, really, to get at the truth. That's why I think 9/11 is something of a catalyst with regard to the whole treatment of the media of major events. And I think it'll open up the eyes of a lot of people. Because the official version is so flawed and so inadequate, I think a lot of people will be asking how much that applies to other events as well.
Well, absolutely. I mean, even after 40 years after the John F. Kennedy assassination, there's still great discussion as to what actually happened that day. But it does seem clear that at least the government's account of what happened that day, established by the Warren Commission, isn't entirely truthful, to say the least. But after 40 years, we're still having that argument. Do you hope that we can get to the truth of 9/11 without 40 years elapsing?
Well, I certainly do, and I am aware of the continuing controversy over JFK's assassination, and I cannot comment on that other than to say that I don't think a truly and wholly convincing explanation has yet been given, which is very significant. But over 9/11, I certainly hope and believe that we will ferret out the truth, that the worldwide demand, and particularly, of course, those families affected in America, the demand is so great that this will not be able to be buried. And I think that when the Keane Commission reports on July the 26th, I think a lot of people will be asking questions about whether the account that they give is really satisfactory. Because it's not enough just to document minute by minute or hour by hour what actually happened, to give a rather more detail, a bit more colour. The basic question is why certain things happen and why certain other things equally important did not happen. And for those questions to be really very persistently pursued, with all the relevant characters, players in this drama, being fully open and transparently questioned. That's the only way to get at the truth. And certainly the indications coming out of the Keane Commission, the sort of leaks of bits of it that as we go along, do not give much encouragement.
What do you see is the biggest inconsistency between the official story and the independent research?
Well, I think there are several of those. I suppose the biggest is what actually happened on the day. The fact that it was known that four civil airliners had been hijacked. This was known latest by about 8:10 to 8:20 a.m. on the day of September the 11th. The first plane hit one of the World Trade Towers at 8:45 and the second at 9:05, and then the Pentagon was hit at about 9:38. So there was something like an hour and a half when the most technologically advanced, the greatest military power of the present time on Earth or at any time in history, with its own capital, its own major institutions under attack, and they failed to get a single fighter aircraft into the air to confront those who were perpetrating this terrorist act.
Not least from that.
I find that just absolutely amazing. I find it completely unexplained by saying that there was a slowness of reaction and there were delays and the communications were not made. This is a country that prides itself on being at the forefront of technology, of communications, of military prowess, and that degree of incompetence is just, I think, impossible to believe. But it's not just me saying that. John Loftus, who is the federal crimes prosecutor for the US, has said that it is, and I think his words were, the information provided by European intelligence services prior to 9/11 was so extensive that it is no longer possible for either the CIA or the FBI to assert a defense of incompetence. That's a reference to the fact that 11 countries gave detailed information. It was certainly known that there was going to be a hijack. It was known since 1996 and reported on in 1999 by the joint Senate and House of Representatives Intelligence Committee that there could well be plans for an aircraft packed with explosives to attack either the White House or the CIA.
Or the Capitol building, I think, as well.
Sorry?
Or the Capitol building as well,
yes,
I think.
Yes.
And this is Operation Bojinka.
Yes, I mean, all of these were possibilities. The Mossad supplied a name of 200 terrorists in the United States, including at least four of the 19 hijackers. None of them were arrested. Zacharias Massawi, allegedly the 20th hijacker, was showing a very suspicious interest in flying large airliners. This suspicion was passed on. He was arrested, and the FBI agents wanted to investigate the computer, and the information came down from the higher levels of the FBI hierarchy that they were not to do that. And it is now known that it contained some data which was relevant to the 9/11 attacks. I mean, it is very, very difficult to explain this, and I don't think a convincing explanation has been given. But how it is that on the day, an F-16 squadron at the Andrews Air Force Base 10 miles from Washington was never scrambled in order to intercept is just incredible. Now you might say, oh well, they never expected something of this kind, there were no routine procedures. There was a routine procedure in place, the intercept procedure agreed between the FAA, the Federal Aviation Authority, and NORAD, North American Defense Organization, whereby any commercial airliner that went off, significantly off course, would be routinely intercepted.
Now, we're not talking shooting down, we're just talking...
talking about intercepting.
Exactly.
You wonder whether, A, there might have been a hijacking, whether the pilot had fallen asleep, or I mean, whatever other explanation there might be. So the plane is put up, it flies pretty close to the plane concerned, it uses radio contact to find out what's happened, and if in the last analysis it is considered that there is a threat to the American population, to an American city, there's going to be an attack, then it can be shot down. Now that happened, that procedure happened 67 times in the previous 9 months.
And they also did that with...
And on this day, with an absolutely unprecedented attack in the American capital, it never happened at all.
And obviously this happened with the golfer Payne Stewart when his plane, for some reason, depressurized.
That's right.
And I believe the fighter jets were there certainly within half an hour, probably within 20 minutes.
That's right.
And yet, what we're talking here...
I said to your president that this was a regular procedure. And of course, normally, that's a fairly innocent explanation. But the fact is, the procedure was never put in place.
Well, what was...
That is extraordinarily difficult to explain. And as far as I know, no convincing explanation has been given.
Excuse me. Well, what we're looking at with September 11th is a huge number of events happening. The probability of all of those happening together,
yeah,
to allow the events to take place is simply almost impossible in terms of statistics and probability in mathematics for that huge confluence of events, for everybody to fail to do their job in such a flagrant manner to allow it to happen. For example, the fact that several of the hijackers were apparently on airline watch lists but were still allowed to board the plane.
Well, that again is one of the relevant pieces of data that the FBI did have a list, and I believe discovered afterwards, after it had happened later in the day, when they got the passenger manifest or passenger list, that there were names on it which they recognized to be Al-Qaeda. But the CIA had failed to pass them on.
But yeah.
As you say, there is a whole series of highly improbable events which all happen to concentrate on one single day. That, for any of them to happen, is quite remarkable. For them all to happen simultaneously really defies imagination. So how do we explain it? I mean, I can't answer these questions. I don't think anyone can. I think the American government can. but they have not yet been pressed sufficiently for the truth to come out.
Well, in fact, they've even been testifying at the King Commission, not even under oath, because apparently it's just a fact-finding mission, according to the Commission, rather than a prosecutorial approach. So anything that's testified there, we have no guarantee or even promise that is the truth being given.
Well, I think the whole status and approach and procedures of the King Commission are obviously a matter of huge importance and very worrying. I mean, let's not, of course, ignore the fact that the King Commission is something the government was absolutely determined not to set up. They never wanted it in the first place. In fact, they were extremely anxious to avoid it. They did not want any investigation.
And
the only reason it happened is because the widows, who of course have overwhelming public support, were so outraged by all of these evasions and lies, or what they're suspected to be lies, and they raised such a political furor that the government felt obliged to set it up. But significantly, if you look at the original report, which was led by Senator Bob Graham and Representative Porter Goss, these were very interesting. The two senior politicians on Capitol Hill,
heads of the House and Senate Intelligence Committees,
of 9/11, were meeting General Mahmoud Ahmad, who is at that time the head of the Pakistani Inter-Services Intelligence Agency, and who had, as we now know, got a Pakistani intermediary, Omar Sheikh, to wire $100,000 to a Florida bank account of Mohammed Atta, the lead hijacker.
And the man who gave the order, Mahmoud Ahmed, is sitting there having breakfast with Bob Graham and Porter Goss on the morning of 9/11.
That's right. I mean, it's almost laughable if it wasn't so utterly tragic and so incredibly serious.
And we also have
that the head paymaster is actually talking to senior politicians on Capitol Hill, who then turn out to be the same people who are picked in order to write an official report, where 28 pages have still not yet been declassified, and where it's all assumed that it's about the Saudi connection. But of course, there is a question, bearing in mind the Pakistani ISI, as to whether, of course, Pakistan has also been involved in that.
Well, we even had the Bush administration ask Tom Daschle in the aftermath of 9/11 to limit this congressional and Senate investigation, to hold it back to a limited scope, and ultimately that was the case.
Yes.
Because that investigation didn't look at the events of that day in any great detail at all.
Yes. So first of all, they didn't want to have it. Secondly, they tried to reduce its remit. Thirdly, they appoint people Tom Keene is a Republican governor, and I think well respected, but Lee Hamilton, who I think is the vice chair, I'm not sure, a Democrat who was on the Iran-Contra investigation. There's been very careful checking, as of course happens in this country, about the people who are in the lead positions in order to ensure that too much damage will not be done.
Yeah, and
damage containment.
I don't know if you're aware that Richard Benveniste was, during the 80s, Bill Clinton's lawyer, at the same time that he also represented Barry Seal, the famous drug runner.
Well, I didn't know that. But the point that I'm making is that, first of all, they didn't want it. They were forced into it. Secondly, they tried to reduce the remit. Thirdly, they put people in charge as much as possible who would produce, let's say, a sound result and not something which is too damaging or too penetrating. And then fourthly, the method of approach, the sort of method of operandi of working of this commission is very much based on producing details rather than asking leading questions and continuing to ferret until you reach the truth. A lot of the key questions have clearly not been asked. For example, the head of the FBI was never asked about this extraordinary evidence with regard to the Pakistani head of the ISI and how that's relevant to all the key people he was seeing in Washington that week between the 4th and the 13th of September, including Richard Armitage, the Deputy Secretary of State, including Mark Grossman, who's the, again, of the State Department, head of political affairs, as well as George Tenet, and as well as these two politicians on Capitol Hill. I mean, how do you explain that? That apparently, which is a blindingly obvious question, hasn't even been asked.
Well, nor has Mueller been challenged about his equivocation over the identities of the 19 hijackers. That he's even admitted that there's no paper trail for these guys, and there seems to be some acknowledgement that they were using false identities, yet the 19 names and the 19 photos remain as identifying the culprits for the September 11th attacks.
Well, again, I can't speak to that. I realise that is a relevant question, and I, again, like you, would ask the question of why there has not been much closer identification of those who are supposed to be responsible. What I do remember when it happened on 9/11 is that the FBI, having said that there was no evidence, there were no leads, no significant detailed leads.
No intelligence beforehand.
Intelligence by which they could have prevented it. Then, within 24 hours, come out with a list of 19 or 20 names. I mean, that is quite astonishing. And at the time, I remember thinking that this required some further explanation. You know, they're starting, allegedly, on their story, completely cold. And within 24 hours, they've got 20 names, which they kept to. And as you're now saying, whether those are correct, whether they've been checked, whether those who did the check-in have been interviewed to make absolutely certain about the identities, this apparently has not happened. Why?
Well, indeed, the question does need to be asked, but it seems the FBI doesn't want to answer the question.
Well, I suspect that there are a lot of questions which the FBI and the CIA are extremely unwilling to answer. And then, of course, one has to keep on asking why. What lies behind this?
Well, every time a question has been asked of the FBI or of any of the airlines or the FAA or any organisation involved in September 11th, for that matter, the response comes back that they cannot answer it while there is an ongoing investigation.
Yeah.
Yet, when we see the investigations that they are carrying out, it doesn't seem they're investigating any of these details. It doesn't seem that they're investigating the actual events of that day in any detail, but rather surrounding issues of possible poor communication between intelligence departments. Yeah. And so the questions remain unasked.
Well, that's right. And of course, that's the key issue when this report is finally published on 26th of July. Will it pass muster? Will it be accepted by the public? Will it be accepted in particular by the widows and the families? Will it be accepted by, you know, there are investigatory journalists, there are people like yourself who continue to ask these questions, quite a lot of them, and will the critical mass of those critics be sufficient to require further investigation beyond this commission? I mean, after all, look what happened, of course, in this country over the Hutton report, where people, rightly or wrongly, thought that it was a whitewash. He didn't really seriously go into some of the detailed questions. We then had the Butler inquiry set up. Don't forget the government didn't want to set up the Hutton inquiry, but were forced to. And then we have what many people see to be a whitewash. Then they...
Well, the majority of the public believe it's a whitewash. And
that's right.
And Tony Blair tells us that we're mad to believe that. So the majority of British citizens are clearly conspiracy theorists, Mr. Meacher.
I don't think one necessarily needs to see it in that light. But people were clearly not satisfied with the Hutton report. So again, the Prime Minister is forced to set up another inquiry, the Butler report. And of course, we will wait to see again later this month, about the same time as the Keane Commission being made public, whether or not the report about how it is we went into the Iraq War really again passes muster. But I think the scale of querying, of investigation, of disbelieving, of scepticism about what is perceived to be official lying is on such a scale on both sides of the Atlantic that really something extremely important may come out of this.
Well, certainly in the UK, voter apathy is at an all-time high. And this is perhaps in part due to the culture of spin and of, well, not necessarily deception, rather manipulation in order to achieve the desired outcome politically.
Well, that of course is how I think it is widely perceived. Clearly there is a high level of apathy or unwillingness to vote, and I think there are probably many factors behind this, but the question of trust and confidence in government is undoubtedly one of them. And of course it isn't just the Iraq war, but I do think the Iraq war is very central to this, and I think of course once the government has lost public trust, it is extremely difficult to regain it. But I mean, going back to 9/11, of course Bush, as we all know, faced his election in November, and the way in which the Keene Commission report is treated, the way it's perceived, whether it is regarded as drawing a line in the sand, drawing a line under this issue, is extremely important to him. On all the evidence so far becoming available, I think that is very unlikely to happen.
Now, in terms of the internet providing better coverage of the real issues with September 11th and asking the hard questions, there was a development yesterday where one website, letsroll911.org, published the name of a pilot, a Major Rick Gibney, who, according to this website, and it has been confirmed by others, was the pilot responsible for shooting down, apparently, Flight 93. Now, the American government maintains that the passengers themselves crashed Flight 93, but I personally didn't believe this, and I know many others who didn't believe that the passengers crashed that, not least because the engine landed at least 5 miles away. What do you say to that new development, Mr. Meacher?
Well, that is one of the series of explanations given in the official version, which I think now need to be questioned. I have always myself personally thought that on the balance of probabilities, the fourth plane was shot down in Pennsylvania. And indeed, the flight recording does suggest noises which are compatible with an explosion. I think it's far less likely that it was shot down. Now, if the pilot is prepared to testify to that, I think that does open up quite an important issue, because here we have the government making a statement about what happened, and someone who must indubitably be in a position to refute that, saying something totally different. So not only do we have to adjust what actually did happen on the fourth plane, but perhaps more importantly, the credibility of the whole official version, I think, is called into doubt. When on one pretty critical aspect of this, namely what happened to one of the planes, the official version is shown to be just downright wrong. How did it come to be asserted? Surely the authorities would have questioned the plane which was tailing Flight 93, and surely they would have interviewed the pilots. It seems to me inconceivable that they would not have done so. So how do they come out with this theory when the pilot himself says something totally opposite?
Absolutely. Now, finally, David Ray Griffin's book, which has been out for a couple of months in the States and which has just been released here with some publicity, including Daily Mail running a centre page spread and his appearance on Richard and Judy. These are sort of new developments in putting these questions to people and having them look at the issue differently. What do you hope to come from this? What do you see could be the possible outcome from David's book and from Michael Moore's movie?
Well, I think the obvious conclusion is that the explanation that we've been given so far is not adequate. It is liable to considerable doubt on many counts. Many, and I'm not talking about one or two, but I'm actually talking about dozens of questions, which are very obvious questions. Anyone looking into it would come up with these questions, nothing mysterious about it, have never been convincingly answered. I think this book is a good one in the sense that it does not have some wild theory which most people will think is completely off the wall. It is an assembly of the facts, asking the right questions, showing the weaknesses and the flaws in the official theory, demanding that they be explained. Now, I think that, together with Michael Moore's work, I mean, certainly the attention and coverage that he's had, the fact that he is a big man taking on the presidency and doing it in a partly humorous but really very penetrating and effective way, and putting it all in film, because that's far more effective. I mean, I think these two contributions are going to increase the proportion of the, particularly the American public, but also, of course, internationally here in Britain as well, of people who are going to be really concerned that they've not got answers, that this is an issue of absolutely cosmic significance in terms of the evolution of the history on in the West over the pre-war or over the post-war period. This is, you know, one of the most apocalyptic events, if not the greatest, and that we've been fed an explanation which is grossly inadequate. And I think drawing that to people's attention won't just be a, you know, a sort of 9-day wonder in the media. I think enough people are now getting their teeth into this and demanding an explanation, and using, of course, the nearness of an election, particularly in the United States, but also in the UK, for raising this as a central issue about the credibility of government. And I think that's, I just cannot be overestimated.
Michael Meacher, thank you for talking to ThoughtCryNews.com.
Thank you.
From Monday the 5th of July, copies of David Ray Griffin's book, The New Pearl Harbor, Disturbing Questions About the Bush Administration and 9/11, will be available for purchase from ThoughtCryNews.com.